I'm sitting here in the noisy Waag by the reading table with Nick West. Maybe you can tell us what you're working on and why you are here.
Well, I'm here to have a sandwich today, but I've been teaching at the master class over at the Berlag Institute on where architecture and new media meet. Right now I'm directing a research project at New York University called The Neighborhood Web. And the idea is, what if we take cyberspace out of the box so that instead of having to sit in a chair in front of a cathode ray tube, we can be out in our daily lives seeing the web so that anyone might be able to tack web pages to physical locations. I'll give an example of what I mean. Say that you are walking along with some kind of portable viewer, whether it's a Walkman with sound or eyeglasses with a visual overlay or even just a small computer. And like you would buy a Michelin guide when you go to a new city, you would turn this on and choose, for instance, architecture. And it would alert you as you walk throughout the city of interesting architectural sites. It would beep or flash an icon as you walked by and bring you a web page about the specific house or building or square that you were standing in front of. Now, it's easy to imagine tourist applications like that, where you could have a history track or an entertainment track or a shopping track. But the interesting part gets to be when you imagine a layer of information as diverse as the web is today tacked onto physical space so that Josephine could have her personal tour through Amsterdam. There could be a tour of different squats through Amsterdam, of the history of pirate radio, of canal architecture, of any of the possible thousands or tens of thousands of topics that you can imagine on the web about the cities that we live in. That's when it gets interesting, so that anybody who can afford the 50 guilders or so a month to put up a web page can effectively define how urban space is viewed. So it's no longer the domain of rich architects.
And of government information sources.
Exactly. Now the government puts up signage on the motorways. Why not individuals? This way to the raid, this way to the demonstration, this way to the place where they tore down the squat last week, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. And how exactly does this work? How is it connected to the net?
Well, the interesting thing is that there's a free resource that's being beamed down all around us that we can take from the American military and use for free, or almost free, just the cost of the technology to receive it. It's called Global Positioning Satellites. And it's a series of satellites that beam down very exact latitude and longitude information about every location in the world. There's a little bit of a hack involved because the information that's currently beamed from the satellites is jammed by the U.S. military, so that you can't get accuracy any greater than 100 meters. So if I had one of these devices, which you can buy in backpacking stores throughout the states, it would tell me the location of the Waag within 100 meters. There's an extra device.
Why is this done?
I think the idea for the military was that it was done to allow infantry soldiers to find out exactly where they were in wartime and to call in very precise artillery or bombing strikes. The irony is that, and that's why they introduced the error signal, because they didn't want the enemy to be able to receive that information. The irony is, during the Gulf War, they wanted, of course, tens of hundreds of thousands of soldiers to be able to have access to these signals so they'd know exactly where they were in a very featureless desert. But they didn't have enough receivers that would unjam the military error signal, so they had to buy the soldiers commercial receivers out of department stores in the United States, and for the duration of the war, they turned off the jamming signal in the satellites. So that for that 3 or 4 week period, the Iraqis could get the signal just as easily as the American troops. It was very funny. There's actually movement underway in the states to get the military to turn off the signal permanently, because it's been such an economic boon for many different industries. A lot of it is, for example, trucking industries that track their fleet of trucks throughout a city, courier services, surveying operations, so that you don't have to consult topographic maps. You can just send a surveyor out with one of these devices and he or she can know where they are within a centimeter once they have the error correction out of the way.
But you said also something like that you can call somewhere and actually calculate what is the exact spot right now already.
Right. This is the hack that actually has been done commercially to get around it because it's been such a desired service in the States, and people are sick of waiting on the military to do something about the error correcting signal. But they've devised a method that broadcasts out solutions to the jamming signal that's sent by the military, and you can subscribe to these signals or even get them free in many places. To make a long story short, you can get a global positioning satellite device as small as a card that sticks into a PC slot in a portable computer, and you can get the error correcting signal coming in over a pager, so that with two very small pieces of equipment, you can know exactly where you are within 5 meters. This is what makes the technology possible, so that...
But then together with these two things that are already working, so these two connections that are working in real time while you are walking around through New York or wherever it, the map is made of, you can still have your connection to the Internet, to the several pages that are made about these cities?
You would have to have a cellular modem or a radio modem. What we're doing...
Together with these other things, together with the satellite connection, and this would all still work together.
Right. What we're doing at our research project is piecing together these pieces from off-the-shelf hardware. It's not a unit that you can buy yet, but what we want to do as a research project is to make sure that as it develops technologically, which it will over the next few years, that people keep in mind what the proper uses of it for. We don't want to see it become the purview of any one particular corporation. We want to see it develop as diversely as the web has, so that anybody with access to a minimum amount of hardware can put up their own neighborhood web pages.
Mm-hmm. Does this mean you have to trademark it in a certain way?
I'm sorry?
Does it mean you have to trademark it in a certain way so that it does not become trademarked by a big company and nobody can play with it anymore?
Well, I imagine that what we're imagining that will be done is that a new parameter will be added to web addresses. So, for example, you might have a web address now that's www.devag.nl. In the future, it would be the same address, only at the end of it, you would also have a few numbers that would describe the geographic position in latitude and longitude. That way, you don't really need to worry about trademark, because if I knew, for instance, that you had Josephine's tour throughout Amsterdam, you would send me the address of that. And as I was tuned to your web page at www.josephine.nl, I would combine, my little viewer would combine that address with my geographic location, and your service, which would no longer be a web page but a web track through space, would alert me as I walked through different neighborhoods when you had put web pages up in particular sites. That's the structure we're building. I should emphasize that this doesn't actually exist yet, that it's something we have in mind, but we want to get people interested in the possibility of it, because the technology is just now available to let us stop sitting in front of our computer to use cyberspace.
I actually meant the hardware part of it. Shouldn't that be trademarked? So that nobody just steals your idea and makes it impossible to expand or play with in the way that you are thinking.
I actually would enjoy if a zillion different people took this idea and stole it from me. I'm just here to popularize the idea, because I think it's an interesting one that should be out there more generally. The research project that I'm on at New York University is actually funded by a couple of different corporations. They may end up taking the idea and developing technology on it, but it's also my role to not only develop it for them, but to talk to other people about it.
So they cannot tell you not to give it to some alternative companies, institutions, groups?
No, not at all. And in fact, that's the beauty of it, that this is, once the infrastructure is in place, almost anybody can piece together this technology with off-the-shelf hardware. And even if you have to buy it from major manufacturers like Apple or Compaq or whomever, it'd be like buying a computer now or buying your tape recorder. The point is to make the infrastructure a democratic one, and that's really independent of any company in a similar way to the Internet. Or it should be. That's what we want to ensure it happens.
Let's just imagine this exists already. That will mean that, for instance, we are now in the Waag here in Amsterdam, mm-hmm. a beautiful little castle on top of Newmarket. Mm-hmm. That means that several people can make a web page about the Waag with their idea of
That's
the history
right.
of the Waag. So that could also mean very mean explanation, something very unpleasant for the people that are working in the Waag.
Sure. I mean, it's similar to putting graffiti on a storefront. Well, in this case, it's graffiti that you can turn off. If people in the Waag, you know, say have a disgruntled employee or have somebody that disagrees with their policies, I mean, that might be up there, but why shouldn't it be? I mean, it's a democratic society and we should have access to information. It's similar to doing a, you know, alternative radio program or TV show about a topic, only now you can actually put that dissent in the correct place so that it can be at the site where police brutality occurred or at the site where some nuclear waste facility is being built rather than, you know, trying to put it on the 6 o'clock news. In a way, this could be quite an advance. I also don't want to be too utopian about it. I have a fear, well, it's not a fear so much as it is a realistic assessment that this will be used a lot for advertising. So as you're walking down the street and go in front of the McDonald's, of course, there will be a main McDonald's page that will say, hey, Josephine, come on inside. We've got a value meal for you for only, you know, 3 guilders for the next 10 minutes. But it's also possible that if you were tuned to the web track of the McLibel people in England, that they would have something that says, you know, how much grain it takes to raise the cows for the burger and how much fat is inside and things like that. This kind of dissent exists on the web right now, except that it's lost in the ghetto of cyberspace. What we want to do is take it out of that ghetto and put it in our everyday lives. The technology is here now to be able to do that. And there's no reason to keep fooling ourselves that cyberspace is an actual place. We have perfectly good physical environments that we need to weave into our information world.
And that is why you are here at this lecture series. Can we talk a bit about these lectures now? Okay. You are the only real web person there, is that
no,
right?
No. There were 5 new media professionals and 5 architects as masters for this series of master classes that the Verlag is holding. There's a week class that just ended and another week class in the last of April. Students from all over the world, both from media schools and architecture schools, are coming together with the masters to try and figure out what the hell the two disciplines can do together. It was a very interesting week in that I'm not sure that we came up with any specific examples. There's some examples of architecture and new media that are obvious, like the buildings in Las Vegas or at Disneyland Paris, that are very much themed buildings. So, for instance, as you'd be waiting for the Space Mountain ride at Disneyland Paris, they would have to keep you entertained while you're waiting in line. So there are elements of the ride on TV channels or murals on the wall or audio animatronic figures that would come up and tell part of the story to you. But those are very specific examples, and we were trying to find out in more general ways how the two disciplines can be merged. I don't think it's going to be as easy as putting signs on in the front of buildings, like in Piccadilly Square or Times Square. But if we can build something like this information web or neighborhood web that infuses our built environment completely, it might actually change how our cities are built in the future.
Can you explain that?
In a similar way that elevators occurred. When elevators were invented, buildings were only a certain amount of stories high. Suddenly they could become much, much higher because of the advent of a technological improvement. Similarly, the advent of phones and computer networks have allowed corporate headquarters to be built much further away from towns and allowed people to telecommute from home. if we have a neighborhood web in place so that we can get information about the places that we exist now, I can imagine actually a densifying of urban places, because the premium will be put on central cities like Amsterdam and Rotterdam rather than new towns in the middle of nowhere that are less dense and consist of urban sprawl. It's just a question of interest. If we want to go to a bookstore and browse, it's much more interesting to go to one with large selection that has a lot of interesting books than, you know, maybe a corner store that has a couple of newspapers and that's it.